This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Russia and Turkey have struck a deal that effectively transforms the map of northeast Syria. AP correspondent Mike Gracia reports.
In the wake of President Donald Trump's decision to withdraw U.S. troops from Syria, Russia and Turkey have announced an agreement to jointly patrol nearly the entire northeastern Syrian border. The announcement came after 6 hours of talks between Russian President Vladimir Putin and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan at the Black Sea resort of Sochi. The agreement calls for Kurdish fighters to be given 150 hours to pull back 20 miles from the border. That makes the deadline 6 p.m. next Tuesday. Meantime, in another twist to the chaotic situation, Iraq said Tuesday the U.S. troops withdrawn from Syria do not have permission to stay on its territory. I'm Mike Gracia.
U.S. Vice President Mike Pence told an audience at an event of the conservative think tank Heritage Foundation that President Trump has helped lay the groundwork for permanent ceasefire in Syria.
Thanks to the strong leadership of President Donald Trump, we have an opportunity for a permanent ceasefire. We may well give the international community an opportunity to establish a safe zone between Turkey and the Kurdish population in Syria that will ensure peace and security for all the peoples of this war-torn region. And in the midst of all of it, our troops are coming home.
Pence also said that America will always be grateful to the Kurdish allies who fought shoulder to shoulder with the U.S. to fight the Islamic State group in Syria, although much of the territory they called home would be handed over to U.S. rivals. And Britain's departure from the European Union has been thrown into limbo after Parliament rejected Prime Minister Boris Johnson's timetable for ratifying the new Brexit deal. And for more news, as always, please join us at our website, voanews.com. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. Nearly a dozen parents, including actress Lori Loughlin, are facing new federal conspiracy charges in the college admissions bribery case here in the U.S. We get more on the story from Jackie Quinn.
There's a new indictment from a Boston grand jury alleging this group of wealthy parents took part in a conspiracy to try to bribe an organization that receives federal funding. Prosecutors are turning up the heat, pushing for guilty pleas. Some parents are accused of paying admissions consultant Rick Singer to falsely portray their children as athletes, while others are accused of paying Singer to help cheat on entrance exams. A total of 35 parents have been charged, including actress Felicity Huffman, who's serving a 14-day prison sentence. I'm Jackie Quinn.
New York City and the state of California are suing the U.S. Postal Service over cigarettes. AP's Julie Walker has more on that story.
The lawsuit filed Tuesday in Brooklyn federal court blames the Postal Service for cigarette tax evasion. It says smugglers take advantage of widely varying tax rates on cigarettes to rely on a postal delivery system that looks the other way. New York and California say cigarettes purchased through the mail cheat governments of millions in tax revenue, stall anti-smoking efforts, and keep health care costs high. The lawsuit seeks a court order to force the Postal Service to intercept and destroy those cigarettes. I'm Julie Walker.
Around 500,000 residents of Northern California here in the U.S. could have their electric service suspended as early as Wednesday, as the state's largest power company considers cutting power in an attempt to prevent wildfires. The warning from Pacific Gas and Electric comes just 2 weeks after the utility cut power to 2 million people, many for several days. PG&E has been using blackouts as a preventive measure ever since its power lines were blamed for setting fires in Northern California nearly a year ago that killed nearly 86 people and burned 62 hectares. And in sports, the Washington Nationals win their first World Series game, defeating the Houston Astros 5-4 down in Houston. Play resumes on Wednesday. The first team with four wins will clinch the World Series championship. For details on more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Wednesday, October 23rd. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The people of Botswana are voting today in a presidential election.
The Electoral Commission is more than ready for the Wednesday general elections. We just finalizing distribution of ballot papers and other materials to their respective polling stations.
Zimbabwe doctors vow to continue their strike despite a government offer of a 100% raise in allowances. Malawi's human rights defenders plan more protests to demand Election Commission Chair's resignation. And Guinea's opposition calls for a million-person protest this Thursday as the government announces jail terms for five opposition and civil society leaders.
The aim is not to make silent the protesters. The aim is to show to people that there is a limit between liberty of expression and the trend to put the Guinea population into danger.
Amara Sampare is a Guinea's information minister. Abuse in Nigerian Islamic schools spark regulation demands. And we'll speak with the author of a new book about Guinea-Bissau's liberation struggle. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The people of Botswana are voting today in presidential election that some say presents the first genuine challenge to the ruling Botswana Democratic Party, which has ruled the country since independence. The opposition received a significant boost after former President Seretse Khama Ian Khama resigned from the ruling party to back the opposition. Osupile Maroba is a spokesperson for the Independent Electoral Commission of Botswana. He says the commission is prepared to administer a credible election.
The Electoral Commission is more than ready for the Wednesday general elections. All the preparations has been concluded. We just finalizing distribution of ballot papers and other materials to the respective polling stations.
How has the distribution gone, and how ready will you be on Wednesday, particularly when the Electoral Commission, as you have previously told us, has been preparing for this a long while ago?
Yes, distribution of materials is in stages. There are those materials that are not sensitive, that are not confidential, and those have been long been distributed, including tents, where we are going to pitch up tents for voting purposes, where we are going to have a portable toilet for those outside police station in the rural areas. We have also a distribution of water containers for all the polls at those police stations. Now, the sensitive materials, which include the booth, the ballot papers, and ballot boxes, those are the materials that I would say are ongoing. But the final day is today. All these materials that are sensitive materials, they should have reached all the police stations for the Wednesday poll.
Now, talk to me about international poll observers who are in the country to monitor the elections. I know that the local observers have deployed.
Yes, we have quite a number of observers. We have international organizations like the European Union, the Commonwealth, African Union, SADC organizations, ECF SADC, which is a mother organization for the Electoral Commission of SADC. They are all here, and they have deployed their team all over the country. And over and above that, we have local observers who are also are on the ground to start witnessing the distribution and finally the poll that is coming on Wednesday.
So what is the Electoral Commission's message to the people of Botswana as they go to the polls on Wednesday?
Just to tell them that is the usual peaceful environment, is the usual amicable atmosphere, that all those that have registered and have the registration card and everything that is needed should head to the police station on Wednesday and exercise their right.
Also, Pile Manroba is the spokesperson for the Independent Electoral Commission of Botswana. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Habaroni. Zimbabwean doctors say they will continue with their 51-day strike despite the government offer of a 100% raise in their allowances. The doctors say the offer is insignificant, taking into account the high cost of living in the country. Dr. Tawanda Zwakada, acting secretary general of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, says they want the government to increase their salaries as well as on-call allowances using the current interbank rate of $1 to 14 Zimbabwe dollars.
Our salaries have been eroded by 1,500%, and the government went on to give us a 100% increment on our health specific allowance. For us, it's the on-call allowance, which has been demanding for it to be pegged at the prevailing interbank rate. So what they have simply done is to double it from the current 1,200 RTGS to 2,400 RTGS, whereas we wanted it to be multiplied by 15. They have multiplied it by 2. So this brings us to a total package of less than $180 per month.
So what does it mean in terms of you being on industrial action? What are you going to do?
We are not accepting this offer. And it means that today is our day number 51 since doctors declared incapacitation nationwide. So we're going ahead incapacitated like before, you know, until government comes to its senses and comes with a meaningful offer. That's when we can start negotiation.
If it is a meaningful offer, what does that mean? How much do you want?
Well, our demand still remains the same. Because, we want a long-lasting solution to this perennial industrial action. So an offer that we consider meaningful will be our usual demand to have our own core allowance being reviewed at the prevailing interbank rate for that month. So this would take the figures, say today's interbank rate is at 14, would have our own core allowance to 16,800 RTGS from the current 2,400. We expect it to be 16,800.
Now, since government is saying it doesn't have money to pay you, so which means you are going to be on strike forever, is that the case?
We don't know how it's going to end also, but what we hear here at the moment is that doctors are incapacitated and they remain incapacitated until government comes up with a meaningful offer.
Dr. Tawanda Zwakada is the Acting Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association. He spoke from Harare with Gibbs Dube of VOA's Zimbabwe Service. The Human Rights Defenders Forum of Malawi says it is planning more protests in the north of the country. The group has been holding demonstrations demanding the ouster of Malawi Elections Commission Chairperson Justice Jane Ansah. The group accused Justice Ansah of bungling the May 21st general election, saying she cannot be trusted to administer transparent and credible future elections. But President Arthur Mutharika has warned that the organizers will be dealt with if they continue to organize protests, which he says often turned violent. Information Minister Mark Botomani says the government is studying the Human Rights Defenders' protest plan before deciding its next plan of action.
Our position as government has not changed. Our position is the same as it has always been, that we do not see any merit in the fact that Dr. Jane Ansah should resign, or let alone that the president must fire her. Because according to the way things went, she did nothing outside of the law. She announced the results according to the procedures that Jane laid down. And, of course, the warring partners, and that is UTM and MCP, went to court to seek justice on the same. And all of us are waiting for the court to determine. But as we stand now, there is no court or any entity in Malawi anywhere that has found that they didn't answer guilty of anything.
They are saying that the reason behind their demand is that Malawians have lost confidence in her because she bungled the recent election. The reason why two main opposition parties are in court challenging the outcome of the election. And that is why they said they don't have confidence in her to organize future elections. What do you make of this?
Yeah, that is the open contradiction, Peter. You know, in the same vein, the opposition leaders took the matter to court, challenging the presidential results, which were announced by Dr. Jane Ansah as the commissioner, as the chairperson of the commission. And at the same time, the very same people are on the street demonstrating against the same cause. And so to us, that is a contradiction. You know, one wonders why can't just wait for the verdict to come out of the court. Now, when you say that Malawians are demanding resignation of the president, it is quite intriguing to us because I don't know, government doesn't know any research or any survey or let alone any referendum that is carried out to establish that Malawians want the prison officer out.
But Mark, some are saying it is their constitutional right and that the government tried to stop them and the court has ruled in their favor. Some are saying that it was also untoward for the president to threaten, supposedly, HRDC leaders who have been organizing this protest, that he would deal decisively with them if they don't stop these protests.
It is true, Peter, and I've said it, that it is the right of every Malawian to demonstrate. Because the constitution, you know, provides that right. But what I've said and continue to say as government is that we are not impressed at all with the outcomes of the demonstrations that have occurred in the recent past, where we have buildings being gutted down, we have seen people being injured, and most recently we have seen Sunday a police officer, being killed during the course of his duty. That is why the president says he's going to deal with anyone who is going to be breaking the law with regard to disguising themselves as demonstrators.
Mark Botomani is the Malawian Information Minister. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the Egyptian capital, Cairo. Today is Wednesday, October 23rd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. A judge in Guinea on Tuesday sentenced 5 opposition and civil society leaders to jail terms for organizing last week's deadly protest against a likely third-term bid by President Alpha Condé. Former government minister Abdulrahman Sano received a 1-year term. 4 other members of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, FNDC, received 6-month sentences, respectively. Guinean Information Minister Amara Sampare says there is a limit between the right to free speech and the threatening of a nation. He says the protesters endangered the peace and stability of the nation while protesting against the suspected project of introducing a new constitution in the country, which he says does not exist.
The thing that you need to understand is this organization, the so-called FNDC, is protesting against the suspected project of introducing a new constitution in the country. What is actually going on is that the president has asked the prime minister to listen to all the people, the political parties, the civil society organization, and all activists that wanted to give their opinion on the organization of a referendum to propose a new constitution to the people of Guinea. So far, there is no project of new constitution. The referendum is not active for the moment because the president hasn't taken any decision. And this so-called FNDC is protesting against something that doesn't really exist. And into that protest, they've made a statement in which they threatened the government and the peace of the Guinean people because they wanted everybody to stay home, no work, no mining operation, no train, no car circulation, and that's the reason why the people were arrested, investigation were conducted, and the trial was held, and the end of the trial was a condemnation, I think, today for some of them.
You said that the people were protesting about a suspected project. Why not just President Alpha Condé come out and say, look, I want to make everything clear, I am not trying to seek a third term? That will put it to rest.
Maybe, but that decision only belongs to the President Alpha Condé. He's still in his second term. The second term will end in late 2020. So he has all the time to say what will be his decision on this matter. For the time being, I mean, I might be wrong, but you cannot judge a political person on his intention. You can only judge him on the decision that he's making. And so far, no decision has been made.
So what do you make of what the opposition is saying, that you arrested and jailed these opposition leaders and the civil society groups because you want to silence the opposition from protesting?
No. I mean, you know, there is a clear separation between the government and the justice. The justice in Guinea is independent. But the aim is not to make silent the protesters. The aim is to show to people that there is a limit between liberty of expression and the threat to put the Guinea population into danger. Everybody is free to speak his mind in Guinea. but you're not free to train the peace and the security of the Guinea population.
Amara, there is another protest planned for Thursday. That's tomorrow. Will the government allow the protest to take place?
Of course, there will be any problem for them to protest, as long as they took all the responsibility of the protest and they respect the process to get authorization. We need formal approval from the mayors that are in charge of those localities before you start your protest. That is the process in Guinea.
Amara, thank you very much again. It's so nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Barry.
Amara Sampare is the Guinea's Information Minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Guinea's opposition parties and civil society groups have called for a million-person protest tomorrow, Thursday, against a possible third-term bid by President Alpha Condé. The opposition says the president is trying to engineer a third-term bid after his current second and final term ends in 2020. The call for a million-person protest comes as a judge in Guinea Tuesday sentenced five opposition and civil society leaders to jail terms for organizing last week's deadly protest. CDR2 Ture, leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party of Guinea, says the government is trying to silence the opposition.
That's not justice, you know, but about politics. Because most people was kidnapped in their home 2 days before the demonstration. So if they condemn them today and they jail them, I think it's just instruction coming from presidency is not absolutely. No question about justice.
I spoke with the information minister, Amara Sampara, and he said that, why were you trying to protest about a suspected project? That the whole idea that President Alpha Condé is seeking a third term is a suspected project. It's not a reality yet.
Firstly, nobody can tell us not to protest in Guinea because our constitution allows them to do so. So during the whole year, there was demonstrating inside the countries in more than 12 or 15 towns trying to solve that idea of a third term. So I don't know why they can demonstrate to say what they want a first term, and we cannot demonstrate to say what we don't want a second term, a first term.
So what happens? I understand you are planning another protest for tomorrow, Thursday. Is that true?
We have a rally. We want to put 500,000 people in the street in Conakry to show them that majority of Guineans are against that idea. If there is no problem about the new constitution, the president has just declared, I'm going to respect the constitution, that's all. And everything is just finished.
The information minister, Amara Sampara, says that the government should have no problem with you organizing a demonstration as long as you follow the proper procedure, that is, make an application to the mayor of Conakry and then get approval.
No. The law didn't say that in Guinea. The law says you just have to send a paper to the mayor to tell him what time you want to demonstrate. The only thing he can say is to tell you that you cannot take this way, but you can take the other way, that's all. So we did that, and so we'll do the same. And the last time we'll do the same thing. They didn't give us an answer.
Thank you very much. You're always kind to speak with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Sidi Ature is the leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Nearly 1,000 people were freed last month from Islamic schools in northern Nigeria, where they experienced abuse. Students at the raided schools were kept in chains, and some said they were sexually assaulted. Private Islamic schools have existed in Nigeria for hundreds of years, but activists say regulation of the schools is long overdue. Chika Odua has more from Maiduguri.
The four schools raided, all in predominantly Muslim northern Nigeria, have much in common. All had managers who portrayed themselves as Islamic clerics, teaching students how to be good Muslims. All of the facilities also operated as reform centers to discipline misbehaving children. And all were located in poor communities, drawing little attention until now. Activists have sought regulation of private Islamic schools for years, but strong traditions stand in the way. It all comes down to a concept among Nigerian Muslims called al-Majri, which comes from the Arabic word muhajirun. Cultural historian Bukor Chabal explains.
Al-Majris according to, you know, Islam, means those who migrated to somewhere in search of Islamic knowledge. That's the original, you know, conception of Al-Majlis. One under a strict teacher who teaches them.
Al-Majlis are usually boys. A parent will send their son to live with an Islamic scholar known as a malam for many years, with the hope that their child is receiving a sound education in Islamic doctrine. There are an estimated 10 million Al-Majlis, often seen on the streets begging for food. According to their Islamic teachers, begging helps the students learn humility. But Chabal, like others, say parents are abusing the system, giving their children away to Islamic clerics because they can't afford to raise them themselves. There's a second traditional practice in which unruly children are sent to Islamic schools to be disciplined. Aliyu Muhammad Tonga, an activist for Al-Majlis children, explains.
I can recall when we are young, when our father used to tell us that someone has been taken to social bazaar and you correct it. So that is my history. That exists.
Muslim groups in Nigeria are condemning the raided schools, saying the owners are not real clerics and the schools are not true Al-Majlis schools. Activists like Aliyu say regulation is necessary to separate the good from the bad.
Anybody can come in. Even a criminal can come in and disguise on that. I am a malam and he can do what he can do. And that is what happened.
President Muhammadu Buhari has directed the Nigerian police force to find abusive so-called Islamic schools and disband them. Chika Odua for VOA News in Maiduguri.
Historian and social organizer Sonia Vaz-Borges has a new book out this year that she hopes will spark discussion about Guinea-Bissau's liberation struggle through a different lens, which she says gives voice to those who work to educate children in the liberated zones.
The thing that I want people to take out of the book is like to start to understand the liberation struggle from a different perspective, which means like not seeing it just from political or military point of view or in terms of international politics also, but to understand that liberation struggle means much more than that and that there was a lot of work made in the field that actually was crucial for the independence and liberation, and also to understand the concept, what we talk about when you talk about independence and when you talk about liberation. Both are concepts that go together, but normally they are not seen it one as an extension of the other.
A lot of the work that you're mentioning, the liberation struggle, a lot of that extra work was done by women. So do you think if you shine a light on this kind of work, it also shines a light on the work of women, which was often unnoticed in not just Guinea-Bissau, but in a lot of different countries?
Oh, of course. I think from our research, women were the basis of the educational system.
Sonia Vaz-Borges is a researcher and historian. She was speaking to Ricky Streich from Berlin, Germany. That is it for this Wednesday, October 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I am James Butt in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, thousands have fled the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo following ethnic violence targeting the Banyamulenge community. What's behind the ethnic attacks in the DRC? We'll take a closer look on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.